Welcome to The Site of the Crime, your weekly Florida and federal criminal case law update podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Lesnetsky of Shorstein, Lesnetsky & Guy. And each week, I'm going to release one episode reviewing the previous week's Florida DCA and Florida Supreme Court decisions, and one episode reviewing the previous week's 11th Circuit Court of Appeals and U.S. Supreme Court decisions. So whether you're on your way to court, taking a jog, or otherwise have some time to spare, join me each week to get your dose of the latest criminal case opinions. All right, welcome back to The Site of the Crime. This is our federal 11th Circuit criminal case law update for the week of October 17th through October 21st, 2022. And today we have six cases to talk about. There were no published decisions that came out of the 11th Circuit, no U.S. Supreme Court decisions. So we have six unpublished 11th Circuit decisions to talk about. So let's jump right in with case number one, Rosello versus United States. It's an 11th Circuit unpublished decision that was released October 21st, 2022. And Rosello is a successive 2255 motion to vacate case. Mr. Rosello was convicted of conspiracy to commit Hobbs Act robbery, of the actual Hobbs Act robbery, of conspiracy to use and carry a firearm during and in relation to a crime of violence, and of the actual using and carrying a firearm during and in relation to a crime of violence, and of money laundering. Both Hobbs Act charges were predicate offenses for the firearms charges. The conviction stemmed from a robbery of an armored car where Mr. Rosello held a victim at gunpoint, and Mr. Rosello and his co-defendants exchanged gunfire with another victim, striking him in the arm. Mr. Rosello direct appealed, and that was denied, and so he filed a 2255 motion to vacate based on Johnson v. United States, which found the residual clause of Section 924C to be unconstitutional. That motion was denied because his Hobbs Act robbery predicate offenses satisfied the elements clause of the definition of crime of violence and therefore did not rely on the unconstitutional residual clause. Mr. Rosello sought and obtained leave to file a successive 2255 motion based on the newly decided 2019 cases of United States v. Davis and Brown v. United States, which held that conspiracy no longer qualifies as a crime of violence. Mr. Rosello moved to vacate his two firearms offenses, arguing that conspiracy to commit Hobbs Act robbery is not a crime of violence, and therefore his convictions for the firearms offenses should be vacated. The district court denied the motion, ruling that Mr. Rosello procedurally defaulted on his argument, and he could not establish prejudice to excuse his default or prove he was actually innocent. The district court also found that because the conspiracy to commit Hobbs Act robbery was inextricably intertwined with the Hobbs Act robbery, and therefore any error regarding the jury's reliance on the conspiracy was harmless. Mr. Rosello subsequently appealed. The 11th Circuit held that Mr. Rosello procedurally defaulted by not raising the issue at the trial level or attacking it on direct appeal. Under Granda v. United States, a defendant cannot collaterally attack a conviction on a vagueness theory if he failed to advance the argument at trial or on direct appeal. Mr. Rosello must show at least a substantial likelihood that the jury relied only on the conspiracy conviction, because reliance on Hobbs Act robbery would have provided a wholly independent, sufficient, and legally valid basis to convict him of the firearms offense. Here, the jury necessarily must have found that Mr. Rosello conspired to use and carry, and did use and carry, a firearm during and in relation to conspire to commit a Hobbs Act robbery, as well as during and in relation to the Hobbs Act robbery. The court also found that the narrow actual innocence exception did not apply here. The Supreme Court has applied this exception where a movement can establish that he is factually innocent of the crime that serves as a predicate offense for a sentence enhancement. However, the court does not extend the actual innocence of sentence exception to claims of legal innocence of a predicate offense justifying an enhanced sentence. So case affirmed. Our second case today is United States v. Davis. This is an 11th Circuit unpublished decision that was released October 21st, 2022. Davis is a sufficiency of the evidence in a conspiracy to engage in sex trafficking of a minor case. Mr. Davis was the subject of an online sting operation where undercover agents attempted to identify people looking to recruit minors into prostitution using social media platforms. Mr. Davis and his co-defendant, Samantha Broadhead, reached out to a fictitious 17-year-old girl online and attempted to get her to travel to Florida from Colorado to engage in commercial sex acts. Mr. Davis, using the username SammyBabyC, contacted the fictitious minor through tag.com and invited her to work as an escort in Florida. Mr. Davis offered to buy her a bus ticket and described in texts how she could pretend to be 16 and a virgin and could auction her virginity off for $10,000. The undercover agent stated in the text that she was 17 years old, and Mr. Davis continued to solicit her and bought a bus ticket for her. Mr. Davis was charged with conspiracy to engage in sex trafficking by a minor under 18 U.S.C. section 1591 subsection A1 and subsection B2 and 1594 subsection C. And he was also charged with attempted sex trafficking of a minor. Ms. Broadhead pled guilty and received 24 months. Mr. Davis proceeded to trial, was convicted, and received 130 months. On appeal, Mr. Davis argued that the trial court erred by denying his motion for judgment of acquittal because the evidence was insufficient showing that he was the one who sent the messages and that he conspired with Ms. Broadhead. Because a jury is free to choose among reasonable constructions of the evidence, the government need not disprove every reasonable hypothesis of innocence. When the government relies on circumstantial evidence, the conviction must be supported by reasonable inferences, not mere speculation. A person commits unlawful sex trafficking of a minor when he knowingly recruits, entices, harbors, transports, provides, obtains, or maintains a person knowing or in reckless disregard of the fact that the person has not attained the age of 18 years and will be caused to engage in a commercial sex act. To prove conspiracy to engage in sex trafficking of a minor, the government must prove these elements. 1. That two or more persons agreed to violate Section 1591. 2. That the defendant knew about the conspiratorial goal. And 3. That the defendant helped voluntarily to accomplish that goal. The existence of an agreement may be inferred from the participant's conduct. Here, the government proved that a person with a username SammyBabyC invited a person who claimed to be under 18 to Florida to be an escort and offered to buy a bus ticket. A person with a cell phone number beginning in 347 described sex acts the minor would perform, continued to solicit her, and stated that he did purchase the bus ticket. Therefore, a jury could reasonably conclude that the person sending the texts took a substantial step toward the commission of the offense, supporting the attempt conviction. The evidence also revealed that the phone number that texted the fictitious minor was linked to Mr. Davis's Facebook account. Ms. Broadhead testified that Mr. Davis set up the tagged online account to recruit women as prostitutes, and a recording was submitted from a phone call between the fictitious minor and the 347 phone number where Mr. Davis did most of the talking and explained the travel itinerary, promised to pick up the fictitious minor at the bus station, and told her he would provide her with drugs when she got there. The conspiracy conviction was supported by Ms. Broadhead's testimony that she helped Mr. Davis purchase the bus ticket, she spoke to the fictitious minor to make her feel more comfortable, and by text messages that show that Mr. Davis and Ms. Broadhead both chose to target the fictitious minor and agreed on the kind of work the fictitious minor would perform. And even though Miss Broadband had lied to law enforcement, the jury was free to believe that her trial testimony, that she previously lied to protect Mr. Davis and was telling the truth at trial. Mr. Davis also argued that the district court erred in admitting certain evidence. However, Mr. Davis, his appellate brief included no citations to the record pointing to the questionable evidence. The appellate court is not required to search the record for error when a party fails to offer pertinent citations to the record. However, the 11th Circuit did look at the record here and decided to address three advertisements for escort services that were associated with Mr. Davis's 347 phone number. Mr. Davis made conclusory statements that the challenged evidence was irrelevant and probative value was outweighed by unfair prejudice. However, the 11th Circuit disagreed, finding that the advertisements were relevant to the sex trafficking offenses because they tended to corroborate Ms. Broadhead's testimony that Mr. Davis was her pimp and served as chief contact for clients. Case affirmed. Our third case today is United States v. Gammery. This is an 11th Circuit unpublished decision that was released October 18, 2022. Gammery is a 3582 subsection C2 and Amendment 782 sentence reduction case. Mr. Gammery was convicted of conspiracy to distribute and to possess with intent to distribute cocaine and marijuana. The PSI attributed more than 150 kilos of cocaine to Mr. Gammery, giving him a base offense level of 38 and a total offense level of 44. With a criminal history category of 2, his guideline range was life imprisonment. Mr. Gammery objected, arguing that the testimony of cooperating witnesses was not credible with regard to the quantity of controlled substances, but the trial court overruled the objection. Mr. Gammery later moved for a sentence reduction under Amendment 782, which lowered the base offense level by 2 levels for cocaine amounts of more than 150 kilos. The district court denied the motion, finding that his guideline range would remain at life imprisonment because the amendment applied a 38 base offense level for an amount of cocaine in excess of 450 kilos, and the district court found that the record supported over 800 kilos being attributed to Mr. Gammery. So in order to benefit from the 2-level reduction from Amendment 782, Mr. Gammery had to show that his drug conspiracy offense involved less than 450 kilos of cocaine. On appeal, the 11th Circuit held that the district court did not err because it followed the procedure set out in United States v. Hamilton. The district court considered the record available at the time of Mr. Gammery's initial sentencing and determined that the pre-existing record established that Mr. Gammery was responsible for more than 450 kilos of cocaine. And the district court was well within its discretion to find the cooperating witnesses credible when it came to the drug quantities because the testimony was neither contrary to the laws of nature nor so inconsistent or improbable that it was unworthy of credence. The court also determined that Mr. Gammery could not challenge the constitutionality of his original sentence under Apprendi because the claim is outside the scope of the district court's authority under a Section 3582C2 sentence reduction motion. So, case affirmed. Our fourth case today is United States v. Gellin and Fernetis, and this is an 11th Circuit unpublished decision that was released October 18, 2022. Gellin and Fernetis is an untimely motion to dismiss for selective prosecution and judge recusal case. Mr. Gellin and Mr. Fernetis were co-defendants, both appealing pro se, with the bulk of their arguments relying on a claim of selective prosecution. Mr. Gellin was found guilty by a jury in February 2018. More than 3 years later, Mr. Gellin filed a Rule 12 motion to dismiss the indictment for selective prosecution in April 2021, which was summarily denied by the district court as untimely. Although federal courts possess the authority to dismiss an indictment for governmental misconduct, dismissal is an extreme sanction that should be infrequently utilized. Dismissal is only favored in the most egregious cases. Under Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 12, subsection B3A4, the defense of selective prosecution must be raised by pretrial motion if the basis is then reasonably available. An untimely motion may not be considered unless a defendant can show good cause of the delay. A defendant does not have good cause warranting relief when he had all the information necessary to bring a Rule 12b motion before the deadline for pretrial motions. An evidentiary hearing on a defendant's claim of selective prosecution is necessary only if the defendant presents sufficient facts to raise a reasonable doubt as to the prosecutor's motive. On appeal, Mr. Gellin argued that he did not discover the government's selective prosecution of him because he was a Black Haitian American until after his trial. However, the 11th Circuit found that Mr. Gellin's own admission in his motion that he presented evidence of the government's selective prosecution to his counsel before trial refuted this claim. Therefore, because the basis for the motion was reasonably available to him before trial, there was no good cause for the untimely filing. The court next addressed Mr. Gellin's claim that the district court improperly denied his motion for recusal of the judge. Recusal is governed by two statutes, 28 U.S.C. section 144 and 28 U.S.C. section 455. Under a section 144 motion, a judge must recuse himself when a party to a district court proceeding files a timely and sufficient affidavit that the judge before whom the matter is pending has a personal bias or prejudice either against him or in favor of any adverse party. To warrant recusal under section 144, the moving party must allege facts that would convince a reasonable person that bias actually exists. The affidavit must be filed not less than 10 days before the beginning of the term at which the proceeding is to be heard, or good cause must be shown for failure to file it within such time. Under section 455 subsection A, a judge shall disqualify himself in any proceeding in which his impartiality might reasonably be questioned. The test under section 455 subsection A is whether an objective, disinterested lay observer fully informed of the facts underlying the grounds on which recusal was sought would entertain a significant doubt about the judge's impartiality. The allegation of bias must show that the bias is personal as distinguished from judicial in nature. Here, the motion alleged that the judge exhibited bias by ignoring evidence of racial and ethnic bias and ruling in favor of the government on various evidentiary issues. The 11th Circuit determined that the motion was properly denied because it was based solely on the district court's conduct and adverse rulings and not based on alleged bias stemming from personal or extrajudicial sources. Therefore, the district court's impartiality could not have reasonably been questioned. Additionally, Mr. Gellin's motion under Section 144 was untimely. Mr. Gellin and Mr. Fernandez also appealed the district court's denial of their motions for new trial based on newly discovered evidence. To merit a new trial based on newly discovered evidence, the defendant must show that, number one, the evidence was discovered following trial. Number two, the defendant exercised due care to discover the evidence. Number three, the evidence is not merely cumulative or impeaching. Number four, the evidence is material. And number five, the evidence is of such a nature that a new trial would probably produce a different result. The defendant must satisfy all of these elements. Motions for a new trial based on newly discovered evidence are highly disfavored. Here, the motion was based on the allegation that the government failed to disclose that cooperating witnesses had received immunity and a sentence reduction for their cooperation. However, the 11th Circuit found that defense counsel did cross-examine the witnesses on their past criminal histories, continued criminal conduct, and benefits they were receiving for cooperating, and therefore any newly discovered evidence was merely cumulative impeachment evidence. Therefore, the district court did not err in denying their motions for new trial. Finally, the court rejected Mr. Gellin's argument that the district court erred in denying his Section 3582C motion for a compassionate release sentence reduction. Case affirmed. Our fifth case today is United States v. Loretti. This is an 11th Circuit unpublished decision that was released October 18, 2022. Loretti is a motion for new trial denial case involving alleged newly discovered evidence and Brady and Giglio violations. Mr. Loretti was convicted of conspiracy to commit wire fraud and wire fraud after an 11-day trial involving a multi-million dollar mortgage fraud scheme. He was sentenced to 180 months. On appeal, Mr. Loretti first argued that the district court erred in denying his motion for a new trial. Mr. Loretti claims that the newly discovered evidence related to whether the mortgage broker and lender was licensed in Florida to originate the loans charged in the indictment. However, the 11th Circuit found that this claim fails because Mr. Loretti could not establish that there was a reasonable likelihood that the evidence could have affected the outcome of the trial, because it amounted only to cumulative impeachment evidence. Mr. Loretti also argued on appeal that the district court erred by admitting 404B evidence related to Mr. Loretti's uncharged fraudulent mortgage application that he submitted to the SBA after the scheme charged in this case, but before he was indicted. The 11th Circuit held that the district court properly admitted the evidence because Mr. Loretti put his intent at issue, and the fraudulent application was probative of intent. Mr. Loretti also failed to establish that the evidence was likely to make the existence of any element of the offense more or less likely, cast the government's case in a different light, or have a substantial effect on a government witness's testimony. Mr. Loretti also argued on appeal that the district court erred by excluding evidence that two co-conspirators had the ability, motive, and opportunity to commit the mortgage fraud without his participation, and that the evidence was insufficient to support conviction. However, the 11th Circuit held that Mr. Loretti failed to establish that the evidence was likely to make the existence of any element of the offense more or less likely, cast the government's case in a different light, or have a substantial effect on the government witness's credibility, and the extensive evidence was more than sufficient to support the jury's verdict. Mr. Loretti also argued that a Giglio violation occurred at the sentencing hearing, but it wasn't raised at the trial court level, and there was no showing that any subsequent disclosure would show the undisclosed testimony was false, and there was no showing that even if it did occur, could have resulted in a higher sentence. The 11th Circuit also rejected Mr. Loretti's contention that the district court erred by applying a leader or organizer sentencing enhancement. The court found sufficient evidence that the mortgage fraud scheme was extensive, and Mr. Loretti exercised sufficient control or authority over other participants. Finally, the court found that Mr. Loretti's sentence was not substantively unreasonable, as it was within the guideline range and well below the statutory maximum. Case affirmed. Our sixth and final case today is United States v. Solano. This is an 11th Circuit unpublished decision that was released October 21st, 2022. Solano is an ineffective assistance of counsel and request for a new attorney case. Mr. Solano was convicted for possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. He drafted a motion to suppress, and his trial counsel refused to file it. On appeal, Mr. Solano argued that his conviction should be reversed because his trial counsel was ineffective for not arguing his pro se motion to suppress. The 11th Circuit dismissed this ineffective assistance claim without prejudice to allow Mr. Solano to file a Section 2255 motion. Generally, the court will not consider ineffective assistance of counsel claims on direct appeal where the district court did not entertain the claim nor develop a factual record. And here, the record did not contain any arguments supporting Mr. Solano's claim. Mr. Solano also argued on appeal that the trial court erred by not giving him a new attorney. The 11th Circuit held that Mr. Solano abandoned this argument because he didn't say how the court erred or provide any arguments or authority to support his position. The court also discussed his claim that his plea was not knowing and voluntary because the trial court failed to further question him on his satisfaction with counsel. The court, using a plain error standard, held that there was no error because the trial court asked Mr. Solano if he was entering the plea knowingly and voluntarily, and he confirmed that he was. The district court also asked Mr. Solano if he was satisfied with his counsel, and he said that he was. Mr. Solano pointed to no statute, rule, or precedent holding it is an error for the district court not to further question a defendant during the plea colloquy to see if he was knowingly and voluntarily entering into a plea agreement when he had previously stated that he was unhappy with his counsel. So case dismissed in part and affirmed in part. And that's a wrap. I'm your host, Jeremy Lesnetsky with Shorstein, Lesnetsky & Guyon, and this was another episode of the Site of the Crime podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit the like button. And if you'd like to keep up to date on all the latest criminal law cases, subscribe to the Site of the Crime. And if you like the show, please review us. This will help your colleagues find us, and they too can stay up to date. Each week, we'll release separate Florida and federal criminal law episodes with the previous week's court opinions. Look in the episode description for timestamps for each case in each jurisdiction. Thanks for joining us at the Site of the Crime.